So what we wanted to make sure was that we were always going to be real to our philosophy. And our philosophy is that we want to connect people to nature in a luxury way. But it also can be that you simply take a bicycle and you swim naked in the river if you so wish. But it can also be that we go down, we set up a full picnic somewhere else and we drive it and we have bottles of wine and everything is set up and you enjoy a gourmet picnic in a great location in the middle of nature where no one else is disturbing you.
Welcome to House Guest with me, Carol Annett, where I chat to people who shape the world around us through decoration and design. For this week's podcast, I'm in Italy, an hour from Florence, in a very special hotel and spa, cook school and farm, started by Klaus Thottrup and his wife Jeanette. You'll also hear the voice of Arianna, who works with Klaus. I am sitting in the most idyllic setting in Borgo Santo Pietro, sitting with a glass of wine in the garden just outside the cookery school. Klaus, who with his wife Jeanette has set up Borgo Santo Pietro. How many years ago, Klaus?
We purchased it in 2001 as a ruin.
Okay.
And then it's been an ongoing project ever since.
And it was the ruin was a 14th century villa used as a safe house 12th, for pilgrims.
12th century.
12th century, so 11, even
it's
older.
From 1100. And the first date we have found registered is 1116 or 1120, I think.
Wow.
So it's quite old.
And you have turned it into the most beautiful property with 22 suites. You have an organic farm, a cookery school, a vineyard, outdoor swimming in the lake. The guests can come and milk sheep. They can have a spa treatment. They can eat the most divine food. You come here, literally I hear people saying, what day is it? When did I arrive? Because you walk through the door and you're just in another world. I want to know what was the idea behind it as we're being served ravioli.
So the idea behind it, I think I will sound like I'm too full of myself and too clever if I could say that the idea behind what you have today was entirely thought out 22 years ago.
Yeah.
It's not. There was a clear idea, and the idea have evolved through the works.
Because you're Danish.
Yes, we're Danish of origin, both of us.
Yeah.
I lived in London for 23 years and met my wife in Denmark, and she came and joined me for the last part of the 11, 12 years we were there together. So we loved Italy. We have a house in north of Italy, a small house near the Como Lake. And we decided that we probably could see ourselves ending up living in Italy when we were going to semi-retire from our London life. London is wonderful, but it is London life. It's a busy, or it can be, but in our case, it was a busy, full-on life. We're probably more busy now, but we're busy in a different way. But it was, so we had this dream of buying a property in Italy, other than the one we had. So we felt it would be too close if we bought something on the lake, because then we have a little house 15 minutes away and then you never use the little house. And, you know, and then we talk about better weather because by the Como Lake, it also rains a lot. So we thought Tuscany, and Tuscany became the dream. And Tuscany then, what you say, researched through friends of north of Italy, an American tour guide, which did walking tours in Tuscany, because we tried to find a property. They were in the part of Tuscany that was not Chianciashia. And there's nothing wrong with Chianciashia. I think it's beautiful, beautiful. But maybe we were looking for something a little bit wilder or a little bit more like Borgo Santo Pietro's location. So we spent a lot of time over 2 days seeing 10, 15 different houses and didn't like them at all.
And we're about...
In Tuscany.
We're in Tuscany. We're about an hour's drive from Florence.
Yeah. We ended up finding this property and fell in love immediately. Especially because its location and its energy, and it gave us, I mean, what you see here, unlimited walking, unlimited horseback riding, nature at its fullest.
But it was a ruin.
Complete ruin. No one had lived there for nearly 30 years. So it had fallen in and there lived a lot of bats and pigeons. And my background or my real life work is construction. So obviously for me to see a ruin was like an opportunity was just speaking at you. So we bought it within 15 minutes.
You're kidding?
No.
Wow. Amazing.
And then Jeanette said, it's a bit bigger than what we were looking for. I said, don't worry, we make an atelier or a stable or a storeroom.
Yeah.
We started the garden project and the design to make a grand villa for ourselves. And that time we had decided the stables, we could maybe find space to live in a big villa because we would invite a lot of friends. Now, Jeanette moved, this is the long story, you will filter it, but Jeanette and I moved down here and we stayed in Agriturismo. I flew back and forth every weekend to here and worked in London. And a few months in, Jeanette called me and said, I can't do this. I'm sorry, Klaus. This is too big a change from Notting Hill to be in the middle of... No, I mean, I have to imagine it was a building site and there was nothing happening around here. And San Galgano Church was there and is famous, but the trattoria that is next to it was a small trattoria. There was no, not what it is today, because us coming here have kind of given the whole area a big, big...
Boost.
Boost.
Yeah.
And in the winter, even now, it's still quite relaxing in the winter. And Jeanette just felt she spoke sheep.
Yeah.
And she couldn't handle it. I mean, there was just... So she said, I can't do this anymore.
And her, to be fair, her background is fashion and she worked... Did she work at Neil's Yard or she had some friends? She
started there.
She started... Okay. So, I mean, she's a smart cookie who's been right in the middle of lots going on. So to suddenly... Yeah.
And travelled 160 days a year.
Yeah.
All over the world and suddenly seeing herself sitting here with four people just talking about wild boar.
Yeah.
Was maybe a little bit too extreme.
Yeah.
But on that same conversation, she said to me, as I've been fortunate enough with my building works in London to do some very impressive properties in Oxfordshire and Hampshire and whatever else, which was used often by the people that owned the London home for entertainment for their business or friends. So she said, why don't we try to create a hotel that isn't a hotel? Because we love traveling and we many times have found a lot of limitations when we traveled. I think a lot of people that
you
travel...
You know what you like.
...finds that there has been a lot, and still are, a lot of no's in hospitalities rather than yeses.
Okay.
Breakfast what is finished at 9:30. Can I have breakfast? No. Lunch finished 15 minutes ago. Can I have something? No, only from the bar list, a sandwich.
Yeah.
Can I get a different pillow to my bed? No. Is there any chance that I can have a massage? No, it's fully booked for the next 4 days when you're staying here. I mean, you have these again and again and again, and also in very high-end five-star hotels. Because we all know that you have to make money, and that money is made by being full. Yeah, but there's a price we felt in being full where is the... Item, the idea so important in hospitality is the word hospitality. You're to be hospitable. And if you always are given a no. So we came up with this idea of making a place that had a motto very simple. You can have what you want, when you want, where you want. And that was obviously done over a bottle of wine, that's for sure, or two bottles of wine. And the reality is, when you say that, it's not that difficult. When you need to implement that, you need to rethink everything.
Yeah,
that means our breakfast is suddenly 11 o'clock. It means when our treehouse bar opens at 12, it doesn't close.
Treehouse bar?
You haven't been to the bar, the restaurant, Trattoria?
Oh, Trattoria, yeah. Oh, with the tree, literally, the tree is in the middle of the space. It's utterly beautiful.
That's the treehouse.
Yeah, it's magical.
And it opens at 12:30, and it closes at 11 in the evening. Same menu. All the way through. So anyone can come at whatever time they want and eat. And, you know, a lot of guests have been on the travel. I've landed in an airport where you think, oh, we go to the hotel and we eat. Oh, but they close at 2 o'clock, so we better eat a sandwich on the way. And you think, is this really the luxury? But you could be there for 2:45. So when you don't come from hospitality and you just have traveled, all these things start happening. So what I meant before when I said no, we didn't have the full list and face it as you see it today. But when you implement one idea, then the next idea is born. And then the idea have kind of evolved itself to how can you... We, long time ago, a lot because of England, involved to have a serious vegetable garden. Because England and some of the restaurants I admire in England had big vegetable gardens.
What, like Le Manoir?
Yeah, Le Manoir. I mean, they had it, and they've had it for years before everyone started using it as a sales gimmick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when we opened, we had a real vegetable garden. Now it's much, much more real. But we had a big vegetable garden where the flower garden is now. It was still a big vegetable garden for 12 rooms.
Yeah.
So we grew stuff here, and we had three gardeners, and that's what we did. And then it became very fashionable to say farm to plate. And then, you know, you go to restaurants that has a bit like this table. and they have 50 covers every day. And you think, so these kind of vegetables, they're going to furnish your whole... So there became a lot of this not real. So what we wanted to make sure was that we were always going to be real to our philosophy. And our philosophy is that we want to connect people to nature in a luxury way. But it also can be that you simply take a bicycle and you swim naked in the river if you so wish. But it can also be that we go down, we set up a full picnic somewhere else and we drive it and we have bottles of wine and everything is set up and you enjoy a gourmet picnic in a great location in the middle of nature where no one else is disturbing you. But that integration with nature and high luxury was, for us, obvious.
Yeah.
But it has been a slow process. And if anything, COVID have given it a big kick forward because I think people really have understood. You had big resorts like the Maldives and you connected with swimming, but you didn't connect with, of course it's nature, but it's not that you're integrating into nature.
Yeah.
You just swim a lot, which is amazing. But here it's much more you integrate with, you go down, help to milk the sheep, you collect the eggs, you can have it, you can be a vegetable gardener for a day. I mean, so it's integrated in that way. And that is for us what we feel Borgo is other than if you go inside the first gate. Yes, we are a 5-star luxury hotel that offers all those things that a 5-star luxury hotel, in our opinion, needs to offer. And then it has a farm that does what the farm has to do. But I think the magic is that those two are overlapping.
I think what struck me as being so charming is that you walk around and you come across little areas where there's always somewhere to sit or somewhere to think. Yesterday, I discovered your artist in residence. I think it's currently John,
yeah.
American.
He's fifth time here, I think.
Yeah, he admitted he had a big grin on his face and he said, hey, I've lucked out here. I come every September. It's idyllic.
Yeah.
I paint, I draw, I do portraits for clients. And, we saw him at breakfast again this morning, again with a big smile on his face. And it's just so charming the way he interacts and fits into the environment. And then you wander along and there were some ducks coming, sort of quacking along the little pathway, and we sat and everywhere you go, I mean, you can be with people or you can be completely on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And you can walk for 20 minutes and you'll still find a little area. Oh, look, there's somewhere I can go and sit. I can be at one with the peace and the solitude. I mean, it's incredibly special. And I think it's really, we're now moving into a sort of slow living, slow cooking. It's the perfect kind of holiday for the way we're all, it's that experiential, but on a genuine level, there's a real authenticity to everything.
I mean, I'm glad you say that, because that's what we are hoping that we are creating, because what we have found traveling is that you often are limited to certain areas the hotel have set up with chairs and tables, because that's convenient for them for you to sit there, because it requires less staff. And they can keep an eye on where you need to be served. When you do what we have done, which is to rip the rule book up and said, what do we do now? If you do a garden, which is not one big park and one big terrace and one big pool, but you go away from that and say, we are from Denmark. You have great weather in Tuscany. We want to create living rooms outside. So each room has to give a new experience, or each setting has to give a new. So what will you do? You will then take the chair from somewhere else and move there because you want to sit there. No, I mean, when you have a house with 10 living rooms, you furnish all 10 living rooms. So the idea is that we have furnished the areas how we visualize someone will experience or could experience their stay at Borgo. And that means exactly that, thank you. That they wander around and they then stumble upon these places that give them the possibility to sit down. And in some of the places, I don't know if you noticed, there is a cordless phone.
Oh, really?
You can just ring after room service and then they serve you champagne and stuff in the beds in the spa garden or something like that. Because if you like being there, why would you then have to go back and ask for something? So it's to give that kind of feeling that you can be totally alone in a place where all the service is still there. But then in the evening or other times, if you want, you can mingle with other people by the pool or in the bar or whatever, but you give that space of them to be alone. And that's also why the idea with our garden layouts, which is more typical in Asia, that you have rooms in the garden or in the jungle and stuff, but it's not very common in the Northern Hemisphere. It's often a structure or two with rooms within a structure.
And I think, seeing as we've just been put down in front of us the most delicious pasta with vegetables, and actually, which I helped to cook, I have to say, so I hope you enjoy it.
I'd better say yes.
With Nonna, whose real name is, what's Nonna's name?
Olga.
Olga, who is, well, she's in her 80s.
She used to live here.
Did she?
In the villa in the old days.
Oh my goodness.
Really?
So Olga... Olga came into, from what I understood, she was helping Raffaella with the cookery school, but no. Olga was definitely in charge, showing us how to cut the pasta and telling us off if we were sort of sawing it instead of, no, it's one, it's just one slice. So the food is obviously an enormous part of Borgo Santo Pietro. Klaus is laughing and
touching the stomach.
was that just a no-brainer because you're in Italy and the food is delicious? But it's not just that. You have a very smart, well, when I say smart, that sort of, the food is more formal and saporium.
Yeah, so the food comes because I'm hugely a food fan. Living in London, having the chance to grow up together with Gordon Ramsay and the likes, you obviously have been exposed in my age to a lot, because that was the movement where a lot of things changed. Denmark is where Norma got invented, and it's where all of this happened. So I'm part of that, a little bit older, so I'm part of the one paying to see it all happening. So food is very, very important to me. But what's very important when I moved to England, to Italy, is that we were going to do a kitchen that was very honest and authentic to what we do. And that's why it's always been my goal that the garden is deciding the dishes and nature. And therefore, this very badly used name, farm to plate, it has been abused by so many that it's unreal, but it is real. This is what we do. I mean, this is...
What I thought was interesting, we had the most spectacular lunch yesterday in your restaurant, which is actually in Florence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's called...
Saporium.
Saporium, which means flavoursome.
It's an invented word.
Okay.
It's sapori, which means flavor, and then a saporium, like a space, like a universe. So it's kind of a self-created word, which we felt sounded cool and somehow puts on your mind what you just said. And that's kind of the idea with the word.
And your chef there, who mm-hmm. looked extremely young to me, but
29.
What was his name?
Ariel Hagen. He's Florentine, but as you probably can guess from the surname, there's some Jewish background from very back.
Yeah, well, he was extraordinary. And what was very interesting is that he was saying that, we talk about seasonality, but actually because of climate change, you can't rely on seasonality.
You can't.
And so now the garden's in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really fascinating, that actually you can't plan your menus too far ahead, because actually you don't know what's going to come.
That's what we've changed it to, is that it's an act.
Yeah,
And we do first act, second act, third act, fourth act, and one season there might be five acts, who knows?
Yeah.
And next week we're changing to act four in Florence. And it is not necessary set that the things, for instance, this year truffles are behind. Camillo, there's a very famous restaurant in Florence, and it's one of my favorite trattorias. They close 2 days a week, Tuesday and Wednesday. They open this Tuesday. For the next 6 weeks, they open also on the Tuesday because it's the truffle season.
Okay.
And they open because that's what they always done. Everyone knows, but there's no truffles.
Oh no.
So that's what he means, and we mean with this that you have to, you can't put it in boxes as much as one could before. So Adel Hagen, just to, if you don't know, so he's effectively not the chef of Saporium Firenze. He's the executive chef of all food at Borgo.
Okay.
So his aunt is the one helping Mamolka.
Rafaela. Mm-hmm.
So they're in family.
Wow, you do keep it in the family.
So he is in charge of the two Saporium restaurants, which has a very similar menu, because it's that kind of food as you tried yesterday. There's a variance between some plates, but if you sit down in Saporium out here or in Florence, you know you're in the same restaurant, to speak. Then you have obviously this when you're doing the cooking school, where it's a very, very popular thing. A lot of guests love that, and then they sit here and eat their own cooked food, and mostly that's lunch time. We do an early one and we do a late afternoon one, and then maybe they're served it in the evening if you like. But obviously the lunch hour kind of fits very well with you have your lunch as well. Then we have a pop-up restaurant, which next year will be three times a week, but this year is 2 times a week, which is the tables you see in the vegetable garden. And that is a fully plant-based menu. So you sit down and communal tables, and then you just have fermented, not fermented, freshly cooked, baked, all about vegetables.
Yeah, I mean, the fermentation lab, that in itself was extraordinary. There was a young chap there, and he was covering chard leaves with a
mix of miso and vegetables.
Which are going into the rooms to have with your drinks.
Mm-hmm. Or the lounge in Florence, or at the bar here with an aperitivo.
Yeah. I mean, I never tasted anything like it. I mean, it's just so simple and so beautiful.
So that's the idea. And then you have the trattoria, you try it, and then you have the room service menu. So it's very food orientated.
Yeah.
And for me, I spent a lot of my time trying all the plates and approving and saying, that's not what I like. I'm heavily involved.
Yeah.
And I've been lucky to find very, very talented people that marry and have married this, what should we say, concept, this philosophy.
Yeah.
Because this is a lot of work. Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of work. It's always a lot of work to be a chef. But this here is a lot more work. I mean, I don't think it's a lot more satisfying if you see that part. But if you suddenly have to, I mean, he normal chef will ring his supplier. Meat will arrive, egg will arrive. Flour will arrive and vegetable will arrive, and he does his menu. And what arrives is exactly what he's ordered. What arrives here is what's ready in the garden, or it's the quantity of eggs that were laid last night or this morning. So you have to be more flexible on your menu. But on the other hand, the produce you're having is picked this morning. It's not been picked 2 days ago or whatever. And I think people appreciate that and can taste the difference.
You can definitely taste the difference. and now you have introduced your own vineyard, so you're now introducing your own wine.
That's what you're drinking here.
Yeah, it's going down very well.
Good, I'm very happy.
And also I wanted to talk about skin to seed.
Seed to skin.
Seed to skin. That's because I've been drinking wine.
I mean, so the wine project, first of all, is a baby, obviously, because I like food and I also like wine.
And, but was there a vineyard here?
Nope.
Nothing at all?
No.
Okay.
So when we bought this property for private use, it was always the idea we wanted to plant some wine, and I was going to do a little garage wine and sit and drink my own wine and, you know, have friends over. When we then got finally going with this idea of making it into what the easiest way to describe it is a hotel, other preferences came first, and the vineyards were not priority number one. So the vineyards was thought of 22 years ago, but started actually being made 13, 14 years ago. And we have been experimenting, because again, I don't want to come out on the market with a wine that I don't feel matches what we are trying to do at Borgo Santo Pietro. That will turn down the very much the same as Seed to Skin. So therefore, we found, which have become a huge friend, an enologo that is, in my opinion, extremely good. He works with his son, and he took on this project 12 years ago to decide what grape type varieties we should plant.
Where did you find him?
Through a friend, but he's known as Mr. Sangiovese. Like he is the kind of and he's a very nice man. So he married this project and has kept his promise since day one. So he always say, we cannot make a bad product because the image of Borgo is so high that whatever comes together with Borgo has to at least fit that level. If we can raise it better, but it has to be that level. So the white wine came out for me to drink first time in 2020. And it was okay, but not great. 21, it was better. And then the grapes from 22 is what you drink now. And this is the first year we then have launched it on the market. And the same with the rosé. The red wines, I only like red wines when they're old. And therefore, they will not go on the market before they're minimum 6 years old.
But you have a Pinot Noir?
Yeah, so the Pinot Noir, he has convinced me to make an exception with.
Okay.
Because he thinks it's become such a great wine that it needs to be shown to the world. I think it's good. I still think it's too young. I think it will be much better next year or in 2 years' time. But the idea is that the winery, which we want to build, will then be built in 3-4 years' time when we are ready with all the wines. And then we've gone in and we've designed the bottles. And this one is devoted to my mom, Mia Madre. And because she likes Chardonnay, the rosé is devoted to the friends. It's called the Pali Amici, the friends, and so forth. So it's all about something that connects, something like the rooms gather. It's not about having a name invented like that. So that's the...
And Gerda was Jeanette's...
No, it's my
your
grandmother.
Your grandmother.
Yeah.
I've just pulled the wine out of the wine bucket and it says Mia Madre. And it's the most beautiful calligraphy, swirly with the... is this the emblem? What's the
No,
the
so
top,
the emblem
cross?
Of ours is in here.
Uh-huh.
But this is basically the person we have liaised with here,
yeah.
Betty Soldi. She is a calligrapher and she studies all this and ancient writing. And the oldest symbol is a cross for a treasure. So she wanted to introduce a cross to prove and demonstrate that this is a treasure. And then Pear was then shared out. So it's all Pear 4. So Pear.
A treasure for my mother.
So that's how all the bottles are. But obviously they have different colors, different shapes. But they all are done in this, theme.
Yeah, absolutely charming. And so just to go on to the skincare. Was that also you and Jeanette, or was
no,
that more her?
That's
kind
for
of,
sure, Jeanette. Yeah. So, Jeanette had this big vision of using her knowledge from Niels Jaard and the time earlier in our life to where she connected to natural medicine and she connected to a lot of Chinese herbs. And we did a lot of different stuff to have the chance to get our son, which we now have, 17 years old. So, we went
What's
to
his name?
Vincent.
Vincent.
So we went through a lot of, what you say, ways of improving our health and our possibility of becoming mom and dad and pregnant. So that was very intense. And she studied a Niels Jaard and she really lived that. So when we then bought this place, it was clear that... So this place, what was this place really? What we can find is it was exactly what it is today. It's probably the easiest way to describe it. In the olden days, it was a hotel. It was a spa. It was a pilgrimage. It was a place that people traveling came for quarantine or healing or stay the night and eat. And it was all connected to the farm. So they were used the herbs and whatever ointments they were being made from the herbs in the garden, made into creams and different things and applied to make them. And also through the plague. This was a place that were being used to heal people. And therefore, it has always been effectually what it is today. It's just slightly different type of clients.
In a more contemporary way.
And that obviously inspired Jeanette enormously to then try to get back on doing at least our own shampoo and conditioner and this. And then she got going. She thought, no, I really want to do skincare. I really want to do the whole thing. So what happened is to do it, I was involved from the practical side, but not from any of the others. It's totally Jeanette's Godot. I was involved in the practical side, and there we found out that what often happens with people that want to do a skincare line, or I think always, is that they contact the lab, they sit down, and they might be a famous model, or they might be famous in other ways. And they have this desire to make a skincare line, which doesn't mean it's not a great skincare line, but the approach is that they then go to an external lab And this external lab is then giving them some samples. And these samples are then being tried.
Yeah.
You smell them, you try them, the texture, whatever it is, the texture, the velocity, all of it. And you say, I like version one and I don't like version five, but I would like a version three and four mixed together. And they make three more samples. And after...
Bingo.
Yes. I'm not here to sit and say someone only do three samples. Maybe someone have done 50 samples. But it kind of becomes a constructed way of doing it compared to what Jeanette wanted to do. And from Neil's yard, where they really stand with their hands in it and they mix up these different kind of things, and we became very good, or she became very good friends with Romy, which was the founder of Neil's yard. So it was clear she wanted to do it differently. So we built a lab and we found a pharmacist or as expert, which is Anna Bonacorda.
We met her.
Her dear friend. And
we met Anna this morning, and she said,
there's nothing more. She's a gym.
She said, this isn't my job, this is my passion.
Yeah. She's educated people at university in Rome and in Siena, and she has more knowledge than... So she started a friendship where Jeanette don't come from that knowledge. She comes from a vision and from skincare. She comes from that side. And from doing fashion means that you are used to making samples and samples and samples. This is fine, but I want the stitching like this. I want this color to be cut there. I want the button changed. You know, I've seen her in operation and fashion, and it must be a nightmare to do a dress for her. So that approach she obviously applied to trying to make her own skincare, doing her own skincare.
Yeah.
So therefore, we built the lab. Anna and her then met in this lab, and we bought a lot of different machines and a lot of produce and products, which we couldn't farm ourselves in the beginning. And they just started. And I was shown and asked to try, I don't know how many million different essential oils and skincare products and stuff. And what do you think now? Is it better now? Is it the better consistency? Do you like the smell? Do you like this? Does it do? I mean...
Well, all I can say is lucky you,
mm-hmm.
because I have very kindly, there were some potions and oils in the room last night, and I was in absolute heaven with the smell and the texture and the feel and the, Thank you. And then you walk out and you see the herbarium where they extract the essential oils.
Well, that's what I meant with the first answer. It has evolved.
Yeah.
Because you then build the lab, you then do the skincare, then you realize it works. Then you need essential oils. Then you build an extraction lab. No, so it's not like you sat down with a drawing and saying we built a lab. We want to do a skincare. Let's do a distillation. Let's build a winery. Let's put it all there. It's there, but it has happened partially along the way, and where we are now. So when we were ready and we were launching first time in Liberty as our first customer, other than our own hotel, it was like, now it's real. We need to. So we demolished this lab and made it into an extension and fermentation lab of the Kuhn School. And we built the new lab that was meant to be our ice cream and chocolate shop on the road. It got preference to be a seed-to-skin lab, which you have seen. And from there, we now supplying 120 different clients worldwide. And next step is that we are buying another building, and we are building a lab that's 4 or 5 times bigger, with trucks coming in one side, delivering and picking up and all that. And our essential oil fields are expanding, but in line with the request of the product. And then our chocolate and ice cream might end up going back in that lab where it originally were distant.
So this morning we watched the walnut ice cream being made, and we were there with our spoons trying it. Klaus, I want to know what you're most proud of.
I think I'm most proud of what me and Jeanette have done together. Not one thing. What we have managed to do as a couple and still be together.
Well, let's say salute to that. Thank you very much for your hospitality.
Cooking for me.
You know the thing that for making your lunch, your ragu that we're now enjoying. You know the thing that strikes me as well is that all your staff are smiling. I mean, genuinely happy to be here.
So when you go out and eat a lot or you go to hotels, it will be fair to say that I've had many experiences which have been amazing. But I've also had many experiences where someone looked down on you and you're paying the bill and you're being judged. If you sit right, are dressed right, look right, order the right wine, and I mean, and you think, really? I'm paying your salary. There's something completely wrong with this picture. And it kind of, my kind of personality, it pisses me off, which means my evening or my lunch is not as comfortable as it could be. And often we have found that people which are, and it's wrong to say less skilled, but you get a long, long, long way with a better smile than being over-professional. So when we try to employ, we of course look for the skills. It's clearly we don't employ someone that have never been a waiter or they don't know anything about what it is all about. Actually, we have, but mostly we don't. But then afterwards, the selection process comes enormously down to: do you believe in this project? Do you believe? Because they live in Palazzetto, like my wife was trying to run away from.
Yeah.
Is it more fun now because there's activity? Yes, but they might be 30 years old. Is that their dream to live here? And it only can be a dream if you like what you do. It cannot be. If you hate your job, how can you? So we look for that, and I think we have been very successful. And then I think what happens is that if you have a general team which shines and projects good energy, then the others that join it, they either are falling off very quickly or they join that energy. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And I think if you are in an environment which are very stiff, and very, I'm not saying not right, but very in a certain way, that becomes the energy that is adapted, and therefore it maybe becomes a little bit more sterile. Maybe that works in some locations in the world, but being in the middle of a nature and in a field in a Tuscan kind of hillside, we don't believe that that works. We think it needs to be that much more accommodating, that generally from the heart that you care. And smile is one of the best ways to see your heart, no?
Yeah. Thank you for joining me today. You can hear more House Guest on British Airways In-Flight Entertainment in the audio section, along with our sister podcast, Breakout Culture, with Lord Ed Vasey and Charlotte Metcalf. You can follow me on Instagram at Carol W. Annett.